This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome back to the Fatherly Podcast. I'm your host, Joshua David Stein, joined by Krishna Antavolu.
Hey, Joshua.
Our guest today is Amy Westervelt, a journalist and author whose new book is Forget Having It All, How America Messed Up Motherhood and How to Fix It.
America's biggest problem is actually the thing that we talk about as our biggest strength, which is our like obsession with individual success.
Amy joins us to chat about the role that fathers play in this challenging parenting environment and what we can do as literally the people that caused the problem to help fix it. We're going to hear from Amy in a moment, but first I'd like to catch up with Krishna, who I haven't seen in a little while.
Welcome to the Fatherly Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show.
What's been going on?
A little. I mean, basic
human suffering?
Not as much, luckily. I'm doing sort of more tech and future-focused stories, which have their downsides, obviously, or rather the peril and dread of the sort of AI-empowered apocalypse of human, the death of humanity, the death of humanities, the death of
manatees.
Yeah, enlightenment and reasoning no longer being the guiding force of our lives. You know, nothing.
Man, it had its time, though. I mean, let's be honest.
Well, I mean, you can probably interrogate those values as well. But no, it's been good because I can talk to my kid about the stories. I can talk to him about trucks. I can talk to him about robots and rocket ships and stuff like
What's
that.
What's his take on robots?
Loves them. He once he had this sort of, you know, waking dream fantasy where he talks through it, and he was talking about how like we get a robot and the robot would be like sort of like Papa and sort of like Mama, and then we get like a robot dog, a robot Leela, the name of our dog. And so he has a desire for robots to be around.
Yeah.
And I think that desire is going to be fulfilled in time.
Yeah. I mean, it can be his robot girlfriend.
Maybe.
Or a robot dad.
Yeah, well.
Or a robot boyfriend. I don't want to be presumptuous whatsoever.
In either case, like, so what I've been finding in my recent work life and the stuff that I've been covering recently is that it's much more easy to sort of communicate with him about what it's about, why I'm doing
right.
it, why I'm away, frankly. But
do you, your kid cares why you're away?
No, he didn't before, and maybe I find it like necessary to tell him why, to justify it, such that he doesn't just think of it as the natural course of human events.
On the other hand, the danger there is he's like, Dad, why are you away? Oh, I was researching robots. Robots are more important than me.
Ah. Yeah, it's like, hey, Dad, why are you away? I choose to be.
I need space.
Which is like, I mean, I choose to be yes, because I choose, I'm lucky enough to sort of choose what I want to do, but for the most part.
Which we'll interrogate with Amy.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And exactly. So in my mind, where I'm at as a father is I'm more able to share. He's more able, he's four, so he's just like this massive sponge, and he gets certain things that he didn't get before. And he's curious about where I've been and what I've been doing.
I will say that before I joined Fatherly, I was mostly a restaurant critic.
Really?
Yeah. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Yes, I was a restaurant critic for the New York Observer, mm-hmm. and then when they endorsed Trump, I quit.
Yeah,
I made a big stink about it. And
good for you.
It was great. And I still write about food. I'm writing a couple of cookbooks now. And
oh, cool.
It's still like a big part of my life. But one of the things that after I had kids, I was out every night. I mean, that's what I did. And I couldn't share any of that with them because they don't care. Because fine dining is not something they really care about.
Right.
I will say that the first kids book I wrote, Can I Eat That?, was an outgrowth of conversations I had with Achilles, where he doesn't eat anything. So we would just fight about food. And I love food. It's a part of my profession at the time.
Yeah, I think that's like dramatic irony or something, right?
Yes, it was that. And every conversation we had was a fight. So I wanted to create a book that was not about my telling him to eat something.
Mm-hmm.
Or a lot of books are either like that, or they're like, eat your vegetables. Vegetables are delicious, whatever. It was just like, if I eat jelly and I eat fish, can I eat jellyfish? You know, like kind of wordplay and just a chance to connect over them.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I work at Fatherly, I'm in a similar situation as you, where I can come home and I can talk to intelligently about the new Paw Patrol or McCardimals or even, I think the thing that I value most is what I value most. We have a lot of parenting experts or whatever. I'm terrible at many things as a parent, and one of them is discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And it was working at Fatherly and understanding how discipline works and how to actually discipline your kid. It's ACT for anyone who cares. You acknowledge, you connect, and then you teach.
Okay.
So instead of just yelling, which is what I used to do, you say, Achilles, I can see that you're very upset that we're not going to eat Indian food.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the place is closed.
That's acknowledgement.
Yeah. I can tell that you're upset. I can see that you're very upset. I'm holding his hand, or I'm looking in his eyes. So I'm connecting,
mm-hmm.
but a tantrum isn't an appropriate reaction, and, you know, hitting Augie isn't an appropriate reaction. So, like, I acknowledge, I connect, and I teach.
I think I learned something.
Yes. This is, I've worked at Fatherly for 2 years. That was a thing. But the other aspect of it is that working at Fatherly, and I don't know if you feel this way in your own work, surrounding myself with the role as a father, like what it means to be a father, I'm a workaholic. So if I was writing about food, I'm out every night. It's all I think about. That's what I do. I cannibalize my personal life for my professional life. Finally, I found something to write about that benefits my family as well, as opposed to just taking me out.
Yeah.
But being able to come home and talk to your kids about what you do in a way that they understand is really important.
And the curiosity is something that I think gives our relationship, like, we're actually both pretty curious people. So, like, we're finding something in common.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
I love what I do, but I also work a lot, and it also has a lot of knock-on effects for family in terms of uncompensated labor by my wife and our own relationship, which is for another show.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the reasons I'm so excited to talk to Amy, because people have been thinking about, how does motherhood and, by extension, fatherhood function in a society where, in order to survive,
you got to make,
I understand,
you got to make money.
You got to make money. And in order to make money, you have to work an inordinate number of hours.
Right.
Amy, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You have a new book called Forget Having It All, How America Messed Up Motherhood and How to Fix It, mm-hmm. which is out this November. Maybe you could put in your words, but it seems like the systemic challenges facing mothers and the pablum they've been force-fed and made to feel bad about having it all and leaning in.
Yeah, I describe it as like a historical look at how America has always kind of conceived of the idea of mothers and like how those ideas impact what mothers get to do or not. But I feel like it could equally have been called How America Messed Up Parenthood, because you guys are in there too.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I think we wanted to talk about is how much of it also can apply to fathers. And Krishna and I, as dads, like, what we can do to ameliorate the situation.
Yeah, because it feels like dads were just now sort of like almost recently have been full parents who are, you know, supposed to be emotionally part of your kid's life.
Right.
That maybe wasn't the whole, that wasn't the case for quite some time, making it fall on the mother.
Yeah.
I imagine.
It's interesting. I was thinking about this the other day that I feel like that what's happening to dads right now, like, is kind of what happened to moms in the 90s, you know, like, but in the reverse, like, I don't know. And there's so much more info out there and just chatter in general around mothers getting into the workplace, but not so much around fathers getting into parenthood. And, you know, really, like, both parents have to manage and balance both things now. I think both parents are expected to sort of be doing both things at a pretty high level. I don't at all think it just applies to mothers. Although, of course, like, there's different things that apply to society's expectations of men and women in general.
Yeah, I think, like, I was just thinking about it today because I have two sons, and the 5-year-old Augie has pneumonia, or I don't know. That's what Tribeca Pediatrics says. But
oh, I go to them too. Yeah,
right. They're always kind of like, he might have it or he might not. Let's just treat. anyway, so you know, I had to take him to. He's been sick for the past couple of days, and like the other day, I had to take him to a meeting with my boss.
Huh.
And I just plugged him in to play Toca Boca. I don't know if your kid plays Toca Boca.
No,
but
not yet.
They are like actually really great like games.
Mm-hmm.
I say that, but only to make myself feel less guilty. So, like, he came to a meeting with me, and it is true that my boss, I write and work for a site called Fatherly, so he would be, like, way too hypocritical to call me out on it, but it was a little bit awkward. And then, you know, I skipped a bunch of meetings today to take him to the doctor, and that was after a long period of fighting with my wife about, like, who misses what meetings. And Krishna, I know you travel all the time, so it's the same for you. These are struggles that I think every, unless God bless them, I mean, the wealthy,
sure,
but unless you have the means to not think about this stuff, this is really rubber meets the road stuff of okay, like, you write in your book about the patriarchy, my favorite thing to dismantle, but it's like,
yeah, because it sucks point, for men, too. I mean, it's not good for anybody.
But, like, at what point do I say, okay, well, yeah, I think the patriarchy also sucks. Part of the patriarchy is I get paid more money per hour, pretty much, than you do. That's a systemic problem that needs to be addressed, right? But that plays out on the day-to-day of, okay, well, I can't miss this meeting. If I lose my job, we can't live. If you lose your job, it'll be terrible, but it'll be easier for us to live. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Yes.
Well, which is to say that the man oftentimes is the first earner.
Yeah.
And the woman, the mother, is the first parent.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that those are roles that are the expected roles.
Mm-hmm.
Amy, can you take me through, and this is a stupid question maybe, but, like, how did that come to be? Like, what's the history, I suppose, of how we've ended up in this conundrum?
A lot of that is, I mean, you know, there's the sort of, you know, 200-year-ago history, which is that, you know, actually, the really interesting thing to me when I was doing some of the historical research was that in the sort of, like, Puritan days, a couple hundred years ago, women were considered really, like, not up to the task of being the primary parent because they thought women were...
What a high opinion of women.
There was, like, women are weak-willed and, like, can't apply strict discipline. So actually, fathers were more involved in, like, the colonial days than maybe in, like, the 50s because they were considered really to be, like, in charge of everyone in the household's, like, spiritual well-being and, general knowledge and ability to be productive citizens, including their wives. Like, they were in charge of their wives, too. But yeah. And then also...
But it was neater.
Yeah. And then also, like, everyone was living a pretty, like, agrarian, you know, life. So no one was really, like, leaving the house to work that much. So there were...
And then came the industrial... And then came the Industrial Revolution?
Exactly. Then came the Industrial Revolution. And for the most part, it was men who left to go to work and women were at home and became... That's kind of when you start to see this really, like, gendered division of labor come about. and then, actually, like, the whole way our labor laws evolved kind of just reinforced this, too. So, like, there was, I think it was in the early 1900s to like, 1915, 16 era. Somewhere in there. The Industrial Revolution had begun, but, you know, it was like, at its earliest days. Anyway, yeah, there was like, a big case in Oregon where... a judge ruled that women should have a limit to their workday. And this was a thing that actually, like, all the labor unions had been fighting for. They wanted to have the workday capped at 10 hours. But whenever the male-led unions would propose this, it would always get struck down. And in this case, it was around women workers. And the women workers actually didn't want the shorter day. It was like their male counterparts that were suggesting it. And the judge ruled that women were a special class of worker and that they needed to conserve their energy towards not just childbearing, but like producing quality children. This was like an obsession throughout the early 1900s was like diverting women's energies from childbearing would result in like low quality children. So anyway, yeah, so this productive labor law came into being and, you know, ostensibly to protect women and especially mothers, but actually what it did was allow companies to pay women less. Because they were going to work less.
We'll be right back after a brief word from our sponsors.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life."
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Can I jump in just to note something that makes me feel like profoundly uneasy?
Yes.
It almost seems that the equality that was being fought for was the equality to be equally equally exploited.
Yes, you know, like it was, which is so messed up. But this is what happens.
Yes, that's very fucked up.
Yes, yeah, Yeah, it was. Actually, there's like a whole, that's a whole other tangle to the whole like capitalism, patriarchy knot is an interesting one.
I mean, for me, that's the one that I feel totally caught up in. Mm-hmm. Like that, to me, I'm trying to raise good kids who have opportunity and I'm trying to provide for them. Mm-hmm. And that is, and there's no way that I feel like I can do it without playing into this systemic inequality. And worst, although worse for my wife, for sure, but worse as well for the victimizer, mm-hmm. is that I am part of that patriarchy. I am perpetuating the system that I don't want to perpetuate. And it's like, okay, but how do I get out of there?
Right. Like, how do you just push pause when, like, that's the system that governs everything, you know? And I mean, I think honestly, like, the answer is that it's very long and slow change. Yeah. Well, or and also, fast revolution.
If I can be sort of the unwoke dude in the womb, just for a second. I said womb. Did you hear that? I meant room, but
womb.
I said womb. If I can be the unwoke guy in the, yeah, exactly. I couldn't even do it, right? But, okay, so the idea of biology as that determines relationships in some fashion, of course, a woman births the child. Uh-huh. Of course, a woman has the biology to feed a child for its first few months. So, you know, I can uncouple biology and social structures mm-hmm. in my mind because someone told me about it once.
What a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's do it right now. But, I mean, you know, at what point... Like, where was sort of the biological, the understanding of what sort of the human body was, how reproduction happened? What, you know, where was the science? And was science used as a way to undergird these sort of structural problems? Tell me all about that. Because, like, that's the part where I still have, there's, like, a little piece of me that's like,
women have the babies. Well, that's the thing is, like, this is where I feel like feminism has jumped the shark in some ways, too, is that, like, we don't have to deny how women's bodies work in order to create more equality or a more egalitarian society. Like, I think that's ridiculous. Although, like, I think we just need to sort of, like, be careful about how we do it. So I'll give you an example. I have a guy that I interviewed for the book about who's done a lot of, like, thinking and work around how to craft parental leave policies that don't automatically disadvantage women, because the tendency is to say, oh, let's give moms more time off because they need it. And therefore, they just become inherently more expensive and less reliable from a workplace perspective, right? So, like, it just feeds into this ability to pay them less and, you know, all of that.
Which is correct.
Right.
Which is correct. I mean, I hate to say it, but that's correct in the system. If you follow the logic of the system of capitalism, there's no way around that.
No, there's no way. Exactly. So his take is like, okay, what you have to do is, like, you give equal leave, but you split it up differently. So, like, the mother takes off a longer period of time like following the birth because she physically has to recover from childbirth. And then you do sort of an even split between moms and dads over the next 12 months. And he has, like, various ideas about who pays for that and whatever. But the main thrust for him is, like, you know, you provide equal leave so that neither parent is, you know, necessarily, like, more expensive to the company. But you also do it in a way that requires that both parents have stints of solo parenting. So both parents, like, really get to know, like, the deal. Because otherwise, like, I talked to this one woman who, you know, she had worked at a law firm. They had great maternity leave. She took off 6 months for each of her kids and her husband took off a week. So she's like, so of course, like, I'm going to be the person who knows the nap schedule and how, like, what the kid likes to eat and, like, all that stuff.
Which is a labor. It's a knowledge base and it's also a labor.
Yeah,
it's work. It's actual labor.
Yes. Yes. And that's the other thing, too, is that, like, this idea that's kind of cropped up a few times over history of how you compensate for that labor. Because we do this thing where we constantly say that that has value, and then we don't actually attribute value to it in any way. We say it, but, like, you know, even when we outsource that labor, it's underpaid. You know, like, so at the same time that like society and the government and everything else is constantly going on about family values and, you know, Paul Ryan is wringing his hands about the birth rate like every month. we don't actually like do anything to show that that has value or to support it in a way that that would make it seem valuable, which like relates to the gender thing too, because like why would someone who is getting highly valued in this one sphere volunteer to be undervalued in this other sphere? You know, like who would do that?
Basically that there's no constituency or non-gross lobbying group for the child,
right?
For families,
right?
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that there's no lobbying group or that's not gross and ideological for the health of a child and the family. And
yes,
we assume, of course, that two parents sharing the burden as a two-parent household, understanding that raising a child is work that needs to be shared economically equally between parents.
Yeah.
Is there any data that sort of supports that that is actually better for the child?
Yes, there is actually.
Like, okay.
There's a ton
cool.
of...
Oh my God, thank God.
There is. Yeah, there's a ton of data around like how... I mean, it's unfortunate, because, and I'm not trying to, you know, slam single parents by any stretch, because I mean, it's incredibly hard, but there's a bunch of data around just like worse outcomes on every metric for children of single parents, which is not to say that, like, you know, if you have like an abusive partnership, that's better than being a single parent. Or if you have, you know, like, sure. Of course, like there's also a bunch of data around kids growing up in homes where like the two parents are problematic and like all the issues that causes, you know, but yeah, there are a lot of studies out there that back up that, you know, kids that have, and it's really just like having more involvement. This is a thing I get into in the book too, is like, it doesn't actually have to be two biological parents. It just has to be like two or more adults who are involved in the well-being of that child. And like, that's a thing I think that we should think more about, because, you know, like a lot, there's like, I think it's more than 30% of families are single parent families, and we do not support them in any way.
What is your life situation?
Okay. So I had this very interesting period of time where I was actually the primary breadwinner. And my husband and I like actually switched that. So like when my first kid was born, he was the primary breadwinner. I like took some time off and then went back to work. But my income was definitely not like the income that was necessary to survival. And then when I got pregnant with my second kid, which was like a huge oops, because my husband was not working, and like he was trying to start a company, you know, and so I was the
startup.
Yeah, I was a startup. Yeah. And so I was like the sole breadwinner, and I'm self-employed. So I had no maternity leave. And so I took an afternoon off to have a kid. Most of the people that I worked with didn't even know I was pregnant.
Wow.
And
you were saying that was one of the origins of this book, because you realized, wait, why am I fucking proud of this?
Yes, I was. I found myself feeling like, kind of like, I'm a badass. And then I was like, gross. Like, what? What is this feeling? So, yeah, like there's nothing.
Well, I wouldn't distrust that feeling entirely, right? You were a badass.
Yeah.
Yeah, but a badass for an exploitative system.
Right.
Sure.
That
exactly.
strips people of their humanity.
But so here's the thing. Okay, so I'm gonna come in sort of with a bit of biographical information for me. Like, I travel all the time, and I have a four-year-old. Mm-hmm. And as we speak, my wife is feeding my four-year-old, and we'll put him to bed this evening, and then I'll come home after a day's work, and, you know, that's that. When my wife and I got together, we were, you know, fresh out of college. Mm-hmm. As we sort of got married and decided to have kids, I was basically a stay-at-home writer. Mm-hmm. But then I started covering stuff in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And so that started working. And without having a conversation, it became ossified into our routines that I was
right.
the one who was gone.
Yeah.
And she was the one who had to hold on to everything
yeah.
and hold it together. And trust me, it had like, we're like processing through that decision a lot these days.
Yeah.
But we didn't make any conscious commitment
yeah.
to make like replicating the structures of
yeah.
patriarchy and whatever, but we just fell into it.
Right.
And like, that's the crux, right? Like
mm-hmm.
you're offered these models.
Yes.
And then you end up doing them.
Yeah.
And so like, where is, you know, how do you intervene? Like, where's the intervention?
Okay,
is it a contract before you have a kid? Is it like, I don't know.
I mean, that's the thing is like, there's all these, so I find that like, we do all these things because it's sort of custom and routine. And then when you suggest like doing something like, you know, having a really detailed conversation about it and writing up a contract or whatever, like that sounds insane. You know, like it sounds silly and it sounds ridiculous and it sounds just like over the top, but you kind of have to do those things to do something really, really different. So like I surveyed 200 different parents, all different backgrounds, like socioeconomic backgrounds, racial ethnic backgrounds, religious backgrounds, everything. And I asked them all whether they had talked about how they would divide labor in the home once they had a kid and like, you know, what that labor might look like and how they would divide it. And like 87% either said not at all or not really. So I'm like, okay.
I'm surprised that 13% even talked about it.
Like, I know.
That,
I know. But yeah, and I was the same. Like my husband, I think like a week before I went into labor, my husband was sort of like sort of jokingly was like, I mean, we didn't really talk about it, but I sort of just assumed that like you'd stay home with the baby for a while, you know? And I think that's how most couples do it, you know? But then there were so many things that could have been avoided from even just like a 1 hour conversation. About it. And
the danger, I think,
yeah.
I mean, and this is from my experience and my, like, I'm in the same boat as Krishna. I'm going to walk home and my wife will have taken care of the kids, mm-hmm. except for the Augie's doctor appointment today, which mm-hmm. I took care of.
Yeah.
Nice yeah. work. Dude.
I mean, I don't even want to be congratulated because it's part of my duty and I'm not looking for, you know.
It was a facetious congratulations.
Thank you. Anyway, but I'm going to like, just to say, it's a very live and fluid situation in my house. This is an issue which is litigated on a day-to-day basis, mm-hmm. hour-to-hour basis, mm-hmm. and with no small amount of bitter recrimination and tears.
Yes. Yep.
So the issue with talking about it a little bit is it's so on its face unjust.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you're mindful of how unjust it is, action is demanded. And if you don't make that action, if you don't take that action, which actually has pretty big effects on your life and yes. feels dramatic, especially as a man, especially as part of the patriarchy.
Yeah.
I'm the one who feels entitled and feels like what I'm entitled to is being asked of me.
Yeah.
To be taken away from me.
Yep.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Look, I know this is off topic, but like, we all watch Brett Kavanaugh, right?
Yes.
Like, who? I'm sorry, who is that?
Yeah.
No, I know who he is, right?
Like,
I know.
Like, that anger at being questioned or asked
sure.
or to recognize your own privilege
yes.
as big as my WNYC tote and my New Yorker tote bags are, and no matter how many female candidates I like support, and like I'm doing this fucking podcast about dismantling whatever, mm-hmm. all that stuff.
Wait, I'm sorry. This podcast is about dismantling the patriarchy?
No, it's just about the patriarchy. Don't worry about it, Krishna.
Shit.
It's about biological essentialism.
Yeah, that's right. Biology is destiny. Joking.
All of that stuff. When the rubber hits the road and I have to make the decision, like, am I going to tell Andrew Berman, my boss, who's listening to this now, dude, I'm sorry, I can't come to work today. Augie's sick.
Yeah.
I can't do this meeting. Look, I'm a journalist. We're all journalists. As journalists, you know, you don't set up all your meetings. It's not like you are in the position of power with the source or you're
right.
in a position of power with the PR firm or
right.
whatever.
Right.
You are at their mercy. And at the same time, none of that absolves you from the fact that you are recreating these dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, talk about it for an hour. But once that gets raised, once that spark of change is out,
mm-hmm.
you can't put it away. And I think that's been my struggle throughout having, you know, I have a 5 and 6 year old.
You got to get that straight. These are obviously fake kids. Is this real?
Yeah. I'm actually 14. but you know what I mean? But yeah.
Yeah.
That's been the struggle is Krishna, you said something that made me think. It's like with my muscles, I'm trying to dismantle the patriarchy. With my bones, I'm supporting it.
Mm.
And it's a tough spot to be in.
Yeah.
So I want to say this carefully, but do I welcome here? No, I'll say very honestly, I don't welcome the potentiality of having to put my career on the shelf.
Right.
You know, like that, it sounds kind of cool in a sense, but like, you know, I took a, maybe between, after the last season of Weedekid, I took a little time where I wasn't traveling and I was itching, baby. You know, like I was doing father stuff. I was having the best time with my kid, mm-hmm. but like I was itching.
Yeah.
And so like there's, you know, and then, oh, here's the other part that was that kind of a self-negotiation where I was like, well, this itch, this desire to always go and do to the expense of the family and my partner mm-hmm. will be a good example that I'm showing my son because it shows that like I'm passionate about this thing and it is.
Yes, I tell myself this. So, like,
lies successful parents tell themselves.
Yeah, well, sure, but yes. I mean, I don't know if I'm exactly wrong. That's the part.
No, I think
you can tell me I'm wrong.
No, I'm in the same boat as you, but I also recognize, and I will then be creating little me's. And I honestly think the last thing the world needs is more JDS in it. You know what I mean? Like, they don't need more little entitled dudes thinking, well, I want it, and I'm good at it, and I'm passionate, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Fuck everyone. Amy, but I did want to bring something up. You know, of your work in the past, you formed Climate Confidential,
yes.
which is a collective? Of six female journalists mm-hmm. writing about climate issues. How do you think that sort of systems thinking, which is part of climate,
mm-hmm.
What of that did you bring to writing about motherhood?
Yeah, journalism? Yeah. I actually, like, I've had this kind of obsession for a long time about, like, my theory is that America's biggest problem is actually the thing that we talk about as our biggest strength, which is our like obsession with individual success. And, you know, it's done really great things, but I think I see a lot of the problems that we're grappling with now as being the sort of ultimate end of putting the individual above the common good, which is our default. Like, that's what we do all the time. And so I think that was part of it. I was like, how do we shift this from, mm-hmm. you know, what any one particular parent is dealing with to thinking about like how the system works and how we might be able to change the system. I did this this incredibly nerdy and weird thing with my husband where we like we did like a data project for a year as I'm saying this, I can't believe I didn't include this in the book because it's totally...
I didn't know we were doing bedroom talk.
I know. It was data.
I love it when you call me data.
Call me data. No, I'm just kidding.
Hot data sex?
Yeah. Yeah, we were...
Nailed it.
Come on.
We were literally...
Wait, can we have an air horn? Do we have an air horn?
Jamaican air horn, come on. So yeah, we did this whole thing where we tracked like how much time we were each spending doing different things. And then we tracked like how much money we were spending on different things. And we also kind of tried to correlate that with like overall life satisfaction, right? So it was actually super helpful because it was we were able to take the emotion and like entitlement out of a lot of conversations because it was like, okay, clearly like I'm doing 10 times as much housework as you, you know? So like, you know, he would sort of be like, okay, like I'll do the laundry, you know?
Was this on like a Google Drive?
Yes,
well, it's funny because I've been doing this in my head my entire relationship.
It was a Google sheet.
And getting mad about it.
Yes, it was a Google sheet. And we also had like a giant whiteboard in our room. but
your bedroom?
In our bedroom. Yes. Yes. This is so embarrassing.
Thank you, Max.
Yeah, we keep scoring the bedroom too.
A whiteboard in the bedroom with all your data sets on it.
I know, yes. We did. But it was actually really, it was helpful because it sort of, I don't know, it gave us a way to have like more of a like systems approach to our own lives. And it forced us to do this thing, which I feel like people just don't do, which is to actually like pause and evaluate your life and make decisions. Like, we don't make decisions. We just like let our lives happen to us so often. And as like extremely privileged people, all three of us, I will say, like, we have the luxury of making decisions. We should take that opportunity whenever we can and not just be like, oh, oops, here I am in this position again. You know, like...
Amy, this sounds like an app to me. Like, you know, there's like Mint or other things for like personal finance.
You know
stuff.
What? We actually... That was the startup that my husband...
and is why you have a second child now. Wonderful.
And what's it called?
It never really got off the ground, but I still think it could like be a data thing sets. At some point because
big data.
What was it called?
Yes, big data. It was called Gung Ho
because
it was
Gung-ho.
The whole like process that we lived or the whole process that we used was taken from my husband worked in the automotive industry.
I
Japan,
love that movie. So that is my
like
favorite
the movie. Gung Ho. Yes.
I was literally talking about the movie today.
It's so good.
It's really good.
Here's another brief word from our sponsors.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life." Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
What was the thing that jumped out at you from that from that year of analytical thinking?
Well, we radically changed our lives. We realized that we were living in the Bay Area at the time, which is a very expensive place, and we realized that to have more equity in our marriage and to be able to kind of pursue some of the stuff that we wanted to both of us work wise, we had to cut our living expenses by 50% or more. And so we sold our house. My husband quit his job and we moved to a small mountain town that was
in California?
In California. Yeah. That was much less expensive, but close enough to everything that we could sort of maintain a lot of the same income that we had. We reduced our cost of living by 60%.
Wow.
And that enabled us to actually we would trade off working fewer hours week to week so that we could take turns with the kid stuff. And we were able to sort of both of us travel for work, but we would do it, we would kind of seesaw back and forth. And we've kind of done that over long stretches of time too. He was really kind of the primary parent for a couple of years. And now I'm more the primary parent. So I'm working slightly less, but still able to pursue enough things that I don't feel I don't feel that itch to do other stuff. Although definitely sometimes, especially as a journalist, I feel I don't know, like every week there's some fellowship that like comes my way that I'm like, oh man, if only, like if only they offered childcare in addition to like lodging and travel expenses or whatever.
Yeah, for my, I do the same thing, but I'm not at the fellowship level. I'm more at the like, oh my God, this is a great story. I should pitch it. And then thinking, okay, well that's one more deadline and like, four more hours, I'll be away, and, you know?
Yeah, for a little while, I was thinking of maybe trying to pitch a show where, like, I wear my son in the ergo on my backpack, like, on my back through the show, and, like, that's kind of, you know, I don't,
that's it.
Fathering around the world. Who knows? But, like, yeah.
I'd watch it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, good. So that we got one.
Amy, you in? Your whiteboard experiment is endlessly interesting to me. One of the questions I have about it is, did you and your husband have similar happiness levels?
No. Actually, I feel like there were times where, and also this is a funny one, like, so we had a scale, right, of like 1 to 10 for the happiness level. And then we had little like descriptors for why. And one of the descriptors, because it had to fit in like a Google Doc, one of the descriptors was relationship bad feeling.
Relationship bad feeling. So
the scale wasn't good feeling, it was bad feeling. Yeah. That's the normal. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. And so,
it sounds like a translation from a German
word. No, it's so funny. I was like, we both speak English as our first language. Why is this like, why is this here? But anyway, yeah. And so that became a thing too, where it's like, you know, I was consistently posting like low scores because of relationship bad feeling. And he was like, he would have like a low score related to work, you know? And so, but actually like then that prompted some conversations about like why I was having so many bad feelings about this relationship. And like, you know, it was mostly like, you know, I don't know. It was mostly this like expectation that, you know, I would always be the lead parent. And like the person that knows all the doctor's numbers and like all the little extra things that, you know.
Amy, did you have that expectation of yourself that you would be the lead parent? Is that something you like wanted going in, or is that something that ended up being foisted upon you?
Yeah, no, not really. I was sort of like ambivalent about having children, actually, which I'm sure played into some of it too. I was sort of like, you know, I'm good either way. Which I think I'm like, I'm always envious of the people that like really hardcore knew before they went into having kids that, you know, that they definitely wanted to do it. And like, you know, I think mostly for me also, I just didn't have any idea what it would be like. So it was hard to know really like one way or the other what role I would take on and all of that. That's actually another thing that I'm suggesting in the book is that like we basically do like a better job of like family planning, but like more realistically, you know, like we talk to people about like what kind of family do you want? If you want any at all, what kind of like adult life do you want? And what does it take to support that?
Right.
You know, because right now it's like we barely have sex ed. And if we do, it's mostly like the mechanics of sex and like how to not get pregnant or not get an STD. We don't actually, you know, to your point earlier about like, you know, supporting families and actually thinking about like advocating for the health of children and families, like we don't.
That's why we need a matriarchal dictatorship.
That's right.
Yeah, like a philosopher.
I wanted to call my book Rise of the Matriarchy, and the salespeople were like, no.
Yeah.
They were wrong.
They were. Yeah. Were they?
Well,
I mean, not that forget having it all is.
Actually, that's pretty good too, isn't it?
It's good. Although it makes me wonder, like, what do you remember? Like, okay, forget that. And then what do you replace it with? I think you replace it with, you know, rise up matriarchs.
Rise. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, I don't know. To me, the whole having it all thing again kind of goes to that individual thing, right? It's like one person can't do it all. Like, you just can't.
Mm-hmm. But it takes a village.
It takes a village. Yes, it's true. Damn it, Hillary. No.
Yeah. Well, Amy, thank you so much for chatting with us and being our first guest on season 3 of the Fatherly Podcast. The book is Forget Having It All. The subtitle is also good, How America Messed Up Motherhood and How to Fix It. And you should buy it everywhere, all the time. I'm your host, Joshua David Stein, joined by my co-host and friend, Krishna Andavolu. As always, if you have any questions about the podcast or about being a dad, please don't hesitate to reach out via the hotline at 732-416-4571. That's 732-416-4571. And if you like what you heard, subscribe to the Fatherly Podcast on iHeartRadio. This podcast was produced by Max Savage Levinson and me, Joshua David Stein. It was engineered by Deco Shatorma. Our executive producer is Andrew Berman. See you next time when magician Alan Kronzik, as well as Professor Barnett Kelman, he's literally a doctor of comedy, explain to me why exactly my kids don't think I'm funny and how I can change that. Thanks for listening. Stay cool, dads. Trying it out. Still gonna keep on saying that.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of 2 clinically studied ingredients in 1 revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.